Well, I'm pleased to be in the downtown den this afternoon, and I'm joined by David Orchard, Anne McNamara and Mark Fennessy. It's a professional services panel, and we're going to be talking about international trade, the global economy, and the impact that the pandemic is having on all of that. But let me let each of our guests introduce themselves, and I'll start with you, David, because you're in my top left-hand corner. Just say a bit about yourself and what you do.
Thanks very much indeed, Simon, and delighted to be here and join you all today as well. By background, by profession, I'm a UK solicitor. Spent most of my life in general practice in London, but now I was founded and helped to run a small boutique international advisory business focused on helping particularly SMEs. Do help earlier stage businesses and that, but focused primarily on helping SMEs with their strategic planning, problem solving, helping them identify strategic partners, routes to market, into new markets. And ultimately, what they want normally more than anything is helping them normally with introductions and connections to capital raising to help them with their growth plans as well.
Very good. And you've got up early to join us. You're over in the US, but tell us what your role is and what you're doing out there.
So I'm Anne McNamara, and like you say, I'm now, the last couple of years have been based outside San Francisco, and my company, ShineX, we work in the UK and the US. In the UK, we work with major companies and challengers to those companies, helping them win high-value sales, usually enterprise sales and government sales. And over here, we're working with early stage companies, so that would be like Series A, B invested companies, helping them into the same markets, high value enterprise sales.
Very good. And Mark, we've just started to get to know each other, haven't we? But you're in insolvency. Tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. Thanks very much, Simon. Good afternoon, everyone. And good morning to some. I'm like David, a solicitor. I've been in private practice for a few years now. I currently am a partner and head of European restructuring and solvency at Proskauer, which is a firm which has its origins in New York, but is spread all over the US, Far East, and London and Paris as well. We advise boards of directors, advise companies through stress and distress, outlining strategies to ultimately save the business, and also act for creditors looking to use opportunities to acquire distressed businesses or stakes in them. So we're heavily involved, as you can imagine, in the early stages of this pandemic, with a number of situations which we can touch on a little later.
Great stuff. Excellent. Well, let's kick off. Let's get straight into it. David, what do you think the impact of the pandemic is, first on the UK, but also internationally? What do you think the impact, what are we experiencing, do you think?
I mean, the impact, I mean, there's a question, Simon. I mean, I wish I had the answer to that. I'd be a much richer man than I am if I had the answer to that one, I could tell you. I think the impact we're seeing, I mean, having come through this sort of 2 week, as Mark was saying earlier, this 2 week of, the initial 2 weeks of, is it, are we on holiday, what's happening? It's one of those things, we'll soon be through it and we'll all be back working as normal. Having recognised the seismic changes that have been created, not just here in the UK, but globally, and recognising that this is going to be a longer term problem, I think the way the world is going to play out afterwards is impossible to foresee, because I don't think any of us know how long it's going to last. And I think the grip on is it going to be back to some sense of normality by September? Is it going to be December? Is it going to be 2021? When into it is critical to formulating a view on that. I think what we are seeing is that certainly in the professional services market, and I include finance within that, there is a recognition that this way of working, this remote way of working, is feasible. It does. It's in many respects is better. I'll come on to that later. And things are starting to happen again. In my own sort of specialist areas, there is no shortage of money out there still chasing opportunity. And we are now starting to get the money calling us to say, look, we've got the money, do you have the deals? As opposed to the borrowers out there phoning saying, look, we really need some money, can you help us? Uh-huh. The paradigm has shifted to that extent. Right. The problem we're still seeing, I think, and I think this is going to continue for a while yet, until we get a clearer picture on timing, I think that most savvy investors are going to be out there looking for the opportunities, but getting them to part with money is still going to be a bit tricky until they have a feeling that we've reached, in terms of valuation, in terms of pricing, we've reached bottom or near bottom. They don't want to make you foolish by coming in at what may look like a very cheap price at the moment, only to find in 6 months' time it looks expensive. So I think the things that we're getting happen. I think that's the most encouraging sign I've seen in the past 2 or 3 weeks is people are up to do deals, and deals are beginning to happen.
Oh, that's good. So we might take a hit, David. We might take a hit, but it would be relatively short-lived, you think, and it's going to pick back up relatively soon.
Listen, you speak to 10 people on this, you get 10 different views. My own view on it, and I know from previous conversation with Mark, it's not Mark's view. My own view, so I shouldn't precurse anything he's going to say, but I know we disagree on it. I think there will be a significant bounce once there is, where people are able to work towards some degree of normality. My concern as to whether the bounce will last. I think the impact on business now, and it's not just the UK, it is so global. The damage in the US and Europe is, I think, at the moment incalculable. Mm-hmm. I think the underlying infrastructure, underlying fabric of business is going to be so damaged that I wonder whether the bounce will last. But I think there will be a bounce. I think it'll be a significant bounce. Mm-hmm. But I do have real fears as whether it will last.
Okay, and you operate across both the US and the UK, but and some of the companies you work with work well beyond that. What's your take on the situation?
And on the sort of big picture front, I was reading some stats before this, and I think the IMF is saying they're expecting shrinkage of 6% in the developed world, which was kind of shocking to see that in writing, 3% globally. And like you say, David, who knows? I mean, on a sort of a normalized level, in tech, it's amazing because it's made hardly any difference. I mean, very, very little difference. The hardest thing in tech now is prospecting for new leads, because people are kind of all over the place. But on a, like, walking around the place, it is like ghost town. And you look at things like, you know, I'm looking across the road at a soccer shop, you know, That shop's been closed for 6 weeks. Will a guy really want to come back? What debt's he carrying? How much stock is he sitting on there? You know, does he want to keep doing it after that? I think the thing that I keep vacillating on is, has this seismic shift sort of changed people's attitudes to what they want from life altogether? Mm-hmm. You know, do we want to go back to the old normal? I can't see people, maybe it's just me, getting on trains, you know, getting in your car, parking up, paying money, getting on a train, getting off tube, all that stuff. Really? We want to do that again? And then you kind of step back a bit and go, yeah, do I want to be working, you know, 6.5 days a week? Do I really need the money I think I need? Do I want to revamp my life? Now, that could just be me in a sort of a, you know, hey, it's all a brave new world, let's recalibrate. But I'm really interested to see if we want to do that bounce back.
That's interesting. And Mark, you and give some stats there. You're on the front line of seeing some of this insolvency and some of the contraction. What's your take on it? And leading into my next question, which is really about the sectors. Which sectors are being adversely affected particularly, do you think?
Sure. I agree with David there. You get 10 people in the room, you'll come up with 10 different scenarios, and I think that the honest answer is none of us know. One hopes that we're, you know, going to look at a V-shaped recovery where we have a bounce straight afterwards. A lot of commentary is coming out of the US and the Far East in terms of the hospitality, gaming, lodging sector to say that at the very best, you're looking at probably a U-shaped recovery where it's not altogether clear. If you can imagine the right side of the U, whether it's at an angle, and it's going to take some time to get up to the same level. Yeah. I think just touching on David's point, there might be a short dead cat bounce in terms of immediate glee at being, you know, released from the shackles of their homes, and consumers will have some pent up cash. But whether that's a double dip crisis where you have a bounce up and then suddenly another crash, and then a slower recovery, almost a W type of recovery, is going to be difficult to gauge. I think what some of the real concerns, I think internationally as well as domestically, are strategies not only for keeping companies alive and businesses alive at the moment, and the government's been, the UK government certainly has been, very forthright and generous, and other governments have as well, in terms of, providing funds for businesses, furloughing staff, and that's absolutely the right thing to do, paying, furloughing. And you find as well that, certainly in my experience, when we're dealing with companies, they're very much the sheep and the goats. Any company that's been slightly weak going into this crisis will, I think, personally struggle because they're going to need liquidity. Even if they're deferring liabilities, they're going to have to pay them someday. If they're taking on loans during this time, they're still lumbered with fixed costs, however small and however reduced. And then they're going to have to service that debt going forward. So I think it's really, really important for companies and for countries, actually, to have a well-developed exit strategy for business. And I think that is going to need the, as you can imagine, the defibrillation of governments and also the private sector. I think that banks are going to have to think, and funds are going to think long and hard about, changing terms and conditions of, their dealings with companies to soften the blow, to effectively allow that recovery as customer demand increases. There's no question, to Anne's point, that people are, reconsidering whether or not they actually need to spend fundamentally as much as previously. As far as the sectors are concerned, which you touched on as well, Simon, I think obviously hydrocarbons, oil and gas are going to be severely affected. Anything to do with travel, we've seen BA cut, a quarter of its staff. We've seen Ryanair come off. We're seeing Virgin Atlantic looking for emergency funding now in the private sector, and we're seeing real stress in that area. And I think anything to do with travel, hospitality, events, sporting events, etc. I think people are going to be asking themselves: A, do I need to travel? B, is there an event for me to travel to? The elderly demographic, are they going to be allowed to travel? Can they get travel insurance? Yeah. Simple facts like this. And also people's, spending power is going to be diminished significantly, depending on, how they're set. But you find that discretionary spending, not only for the general public, but also for companies, has been slashed down to the bone. So I think that with all of that, there has to be a huge internationally coordinated stimulus package, starting with government and probably leading to the private sector as well.
Okay, thanks, Mark. And you touched upon, Mark's just gone through some of the losing sectors there, but there must be some winning sectors as well. You mentioned tech. They're having quite a good time of it, aren't they? They're having a good crisis, as it were. Any other sectors that are doing particularly well, or what's the take there, do you think?
Well, I think tech is still verticalized. So you know, there's plenty of tech that's really, really struggling. So like car sharing and ride sharing and, you know, lots of those. We work with some of the newer verticals, so they're doing pretty well. But to be fair, they are early stage. They're Series A, B, so they don't have that much track record to be going at. Again, the hardest is getting traction in this time. I think people's business strategy, it keeps changing. And a lot of big companies have closed down their procurement department, so it's hard to get new deals. But in terms of people who are doing well, I mean, look what we're on at the moment, you know. So there's all the digital providers, the Zoom providers, the
telecoms,
yeah. All the PPE people. I mean, we had an old client in the glove business, you know, the protection gloves.
Yes.
You know, absolutely flying. So there's definite winners. I can't really work out about retail. They just because I haven't been tracking them, but one assumes they're doing pretty well at the moment.
Interesting. And David, what's your view? Any sectors that you would put your money in or take your money out of?
I mean, I think particularly, as Anne's just mentioned, I think anything around medical equipment, particularly PPE. If you talk to people in the NHS, I can't speak for the US, but I think this is a global problem. You talk to anyone in the NHS at the senior level, the biggest issue they've still got is around PPE. Yeah. And the stuff they're buying isn't up to qualifying standards. They can't get it. And I think this is still the biggest fear about a second wave. I think they've now got the strategies in place to create to flatten the curve of hospital admissions. They're still woefully inadequately supplied with PPE. I think that's a major. Anyone is in that game or is able to re-engineer to do it is great. I think generally, from a tech point of view, one thing we've all realized is the fragility of supply chains as a result of this pandemic, generally. And the whole fallacy of just-in-time supply, the reliance on China for supply, etc. I think anyone who's in supply chain technology that can improve or reduce the fragility around it. We represent a client at the moment who's in 3D printing around engineering printing, yeah. Engineering yeah. parts. And they're at Series B. So classically, where Anne was talking about at the moment in terms of their evolution, we're in the midst of that Series B. We've had to suspend it, not for any reason other than they just don't at the moment have time to spend on helping us get the Series B process underway because they're so busy now on absolutely inundated with major corporations coming to them because this technology enables 3D parts to be printed anywhere in the world in real time. So anything like that that helps with supply chain solutions, I think, is in really good shape.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually. I'm very pleased to say that we've been joined by Christina Wadlaw from Western Union. Good to have you on board, Christina.
Thanks, everybody.
Please introduce yourself, say a few words about what your role is, and then I'm going to throw the next question at you. So,
punishment for coming late. No, I'm Christina. I'm head of partnerships at Western Union. We're foreign exchange providers, so we're working with a huge breadth of different customers in lots of different industries. So we're seeing snippets from various different people at the moment, which is the good, the bad, and the ugly. And sorry that I came in late there, David, but you were talking about PPE, and it's been an interesting conversation point for us at the moment. So we've seen fraud attempts on purchasing PPE have risen massively, and so that's probably a separate conversation to come on to. But you know, as industries have desperation, it's interesting to see that where you see money, you see the crooks trying to get hold of it. But we're having to see additional challenges of protecting businesses as they're trying to find new markets and trying to find new solutions. So you're right, PPE is absolutely a great thing to be in at the moment, but as a purchaser, you are open to lots of risk, and it's important that due diligence is there as ever.
That's an interesting point. It actually touches on one of the issues I wanted to raise, Christina, which is around resilience, really. Some economies, some countries have been more resilient going through this pandemic than others, and some are more prepared, more stable government, they might have better political leadership. in some countries, and perhaps that's something we can touch upon in a moment. But any countries stand out for you in terms of coping well with this pandemic?
No, I mean, I think it's fair to say that that no economies are doing well off the back of this. You might find industries within separate economies that are, but the more developed countries are coping better, although not all of them. And I think as we come through this, it's going to be a real challenge for the third world and poorer economic regions. But unfortunately, there are no winners right now.
Right. And you touched upon earlier this idea that there will be a new normal. You know, we will do things differently. And my question really is around the social, economic, cultural impact of this pandemic. What are your thoughts? More people working from home, that's going to affect the commercial sector, isn't it? Office space, things like this. Any views on what might be different?
Yeah, well, I want to caveat it again, as in, who knows, really? You know, get 10 people in a room, as David was saying earlier. But one of the things I do wonder about is, has this caused enough? You don't often get breathing spaces like this in your career, where you just get to sit back and go, really? Why have I been doing things like this? And it's very hard to go against the herd. If the herd is all commuting and paying rent and all that kind of stuff, that's what one does. And I think this has brought a real drive back, let's say, at the very heart, into the home. So you reevaluate what your home's about. Why can't home be a place of work? And then it goes the next level out, is the neighborhood. And does my neighborhood meet more than just my commuting needs? Has it got just more than coffee shops? Can I actually buy substantial stuff in my neighborhood? Do I really have to get in my car and go elsewhere? Do we really need 2.4 cars in this family? And then I think that starts a lot of questioning, and you look at your cost base, and you also look at, what sort of life do I want to have? What is serving what? Is work serving me, or am I serving work? And like, we all have those sort of conversations, you know, holidays and high days, but this has been a big conversation. What I'm fascinated about is, will that driver of sort of an individual emerging wisdom have be any competition to like institutional norms, and will there be any seismic shift, or will we just see a little sort of slight change of the trajectory?
Interesting. David, I'm going to ask you to make some predictions. What's going to be different, do you think, post-pandemic?
Oh, in life generally, Simon, I mean, that is the answer. But I don't think anything is going to be quite the same as it was. I think, for me, in the industry I'm in, it's essentially a financial services discussion today. I think the financial services sector is going to be unrecognizable the other side of this.
Really?
If it doesn't end soon, and there's no way you can see of an end in sight that's going to make a material. Yeah, I mean, I think the financial services sector in the UK, and I don't think the US is much different. I mean, if you look at read Law 360 each day, the number of major law firms there who are clearly struggling. But looking at statistics here yesterday in our own legal journal, an authoritative source is saying that of the 40 top law firms in the UK, top LLPs, 55% of them don't have sufficient operating capital on their balance sheet to last a month. Only 38% of them can. Did you see that, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. I think
it's scary. It's going. I think the legal profession is clearly, I think, going to be. I think it'll be decimated the other side of this. I think there'll be a great rationalisation of fewer major players. I think the accountancy profession will go in the same way. And if you look at the smaller brokerages and financial advisors, I think that I wonder how some of them are surviving now. But not because, listen, they could get on furlough payments, but they're just doing no business. I mean, how long can you carry on doing no business and relying on furlough payments? I mean, it's just unsustainable. So I think that will change dramatically. But I think I'm with Anne. I think that, I mean, certainly I've enjoyed the sort of 6 weeks of spending more time. I'm not sure my wife, I'm not sure whether she's enjoyed it. But it's certainly, I'm certainly taking a very different view on what my life might look like the other side of this. And I think a lot of people are. I mean, whether the real younger generation, those that are just coming out of university up to sort of 30, who are still very, very aspiring, they may sort of pick up the cudgels, I think, and say, let the old people retire. We're going to, you know, we're going to, this is an opportunity for us, and it clearly will be. But I think that, I think it will be very different.
Mark, what's your take on post-pandemic situation?
Well, I agree it's going to look different, that's for sure. And I think it was Jez Staley, who's the CEO of Barclays Bank, said that the days of, you know, 7,000 people in the tall skyscraper in the middle of town, for example, in financial services sector, are actually are over. So they could, in fact, and he was talking about moving bankers to more remote locations, the high street, and the kind of regeneration of the branch, certainly as far as banks are concerned, the branch setup, because commutes, a lot of people are commuting 1 to 2 hours a day each way. And some people are just saying, you know, to Anne's point earlier, you know, do I really want to do this? And to that extent, if you're going to have very, very good quality professionals decentralized out of big urban centers, I think that that's going to present a great opportunity to diversify throughout the country, certainly in terms of financial services. I think the other points are, I do fear for the younger generation. I think that socially we need to keep a very, very close eye as a society on our younger generation. They haven't had opportunities perhaps of earlier generations in terms of having education, you know, free at source, certainly in the UK. And I think that, you know, being straddled with debt coming into the job market is at this time is going to be a real challenge. And I think that certainly that, you know, the younger generation, you know, need to be supported, I think, more so now than ever. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty for a lot of people, a lot of businesses, but I think certainly the younger generation needs all the support that they are going to need. They need to be given that going forward. That may be, you know, some relief in relation to their educational costs. It may be, you know, retraining. It may be, you know, to look again at all forms of apprenticeships. And I think that as a society, we need to really focus on that. So okay. I think it will be different, certainly coming up the other end. I'll just give you just two examples. I think just the third example I will give is globalization, internationalization of business. I think that we've all got used to working from home, the need to travel is not going to be there as frequently. You know, we have great technology, Zoom, and I've frankly, before this lockdown, call it what you want, I haven't used, you know, WebEx, Zoom, et cetera, as much as now. And I think that with that, I think that, you know, productivity actually increased. Certainly in our group, not just because we do restructuring insolvency, but it's because we're spending less time commuting, we're spending less time around the coffee machine. And I think that that's all to the good. It will look different, for sure.
Actually, around the impact on young people, just one example again we have sit on our advisory board, the Emeritus Professor of International Relations from Cambridge, I was talking to earlier today, and about just trying to get a feel for how quickly it might be before university attendance returns to some kind of normality. He's got no idea either. But the conversation we had, if you're now the kid who's about to start, wherever, it doesn't matter which university, you're looking at spending £9,000 quid a term just in university fees, throughout the office, to sit at home and do distance learning on video, a bit like doing your A-levels with mum and dad downstairs. How many of those kids, I mean, the big part of it for me anyway, when I went to university, was actually growing up, got the actual whole environment being around university. to sit and do another 3 years of A-levels effectively with distance learning, I think is going to impact on a lot of kids' willingness to do it. Because the real benefit that they're not going to get.
Mm. Now, let me ask Christina, Western Union, are they preparing for, what are they doing in terms of post-pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to the working situation, we were well positioned to diversify anyway. So about 30% of our workforce worked remotely anyway. So yeah. The leap to enable people to go full time at home was an easy one. The interesting discussions that are happening from our head office in Denver aren't necessarily around being able to work in an office environment. It's around traveling to that office environment. Being an American company, we are very focused on putting staff at the center of what's going on for various different reasons. They're not worried about the fact that we've got this office space, and so therefore, instead of having 100 people in the office, you can only have 50. That would in theory be fine, but it's asking staff to get on public transport that's the issue, right. Which is why we're not expecting to be back to any degree of normality in this situation for this year. So talking about booking out a meeting room, so we're unlikely to be able to book a meeting room because we don't want people in meeting rooms together, yeah. Which is interesting, you know, it's different. But if I spoke to you 6 months ago and you said, can we get on a video call and can we turn the cameras on, I don't think I'd be the only one that would sit there and cringe a little bit at the prospect of doing that. Whereas now it's absolutely the norm. And so funnily enough, even this week, we're rolling out training about how to have conversations with people, because ultimately we're having involved financial conversations with somebody. If you can't see their reaction, or if you don't know what they look like in the first place, it's really hard to gauge just having a conversation with somebody with a blank name on a Zoom call. You know, it's yes. Interesting. So I think, as a business organization and as a sales organization, whatever it is you're doing, we're all in new, you know, all of us have to have new business somewhere along the line. Mm. It's finding the balance of being very sensitive to the fact that we've all got people that we know and love that have been affected by the pandemic. So we have to be very sensitive to that. But there comes a conversation around how do we do business beyond the immediate tragedy? So how are we looking forward to future-proof what's going to happen in 3 months' time? And it's a difficult and delicate balancing act that we have to approach, because no one wants a cold call at the best of times. You don't want one now, that's for sure, because you don't know what's going in someone's life. But we do need to address that, because in 3 months' time, we're going to be all wanting to have sales numbers. We need to be feeding our sales pipeline to ensure that we're all still here. So it's an interesting point. I don't think we're going to be having mass boardroom meetings anymore. They're probably more likely to be virtual. And it's finding innovative ways to support customer journey, whatever your industry is, to make sure that that can still happen.
And let me come to my old trade, touch upon my old trade, politics, and I'm going to open it up to you, Anne, first. Donald Trump, he must have been, you're in the US there, he must have been not a dead cert to regain the position, presidential position, but he's having difficulty there, isn't he? And what do you think in terms of Boris's chances now? He's had a bad crisis, has he, or has he had a good one? What's your take on all of it?
You know, when you bring up the name Donald Trump here, it is like the third rail in the UK. You just never know who's at the other end of that conversation. He's so divisive. I you know what, I can't call it. I didn't think he was going to get in last time, and he got himself in, and I have been like blown away with how he's presented himself, behaved in his briefings. And you still, the people who think he's doing a great job still think he's doing a great job. The people who think he's killing the country think he's killing the country. I think when all the stats come home to roost, we will see how he's handled this pandemic. At the moment, it's not looking very good. So do I think he'll get in? This is definitely Dennis's chances. I think he's lost. He's maintained his base, but he's lost the establishment part of the base. I don't think Biden is going to be attractive enough for most Republicans to move over. I don't know who would be, but it's not going to be him. He's got too many skeletons in the closet. And as for Boris Johnson, you guys probably have a better feel. What I just watched the stats, and last time I looked, we were at 28,000 deaths. I don't know if that's where we're up to. I think that's an indication of them not meeting their own aspirations as to what they wanted to meet in this crisis. Seems a bit chaotic from where I'm standing. I think what's been really unfortunate for Britain, and we certainly really, really felt it, you know, Brexit, 3 years of uncertainty, and then rolling into this, you know, Mark, you were talking about companies who go in a weakened position. I certainly felt Britain was going into coronavirus in a weakened position.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark, go on, yeah.
No, I was just saying, I haven't got a comment on politicians, but I think that just generally looking at what is the most important currency that we have at the moment, I think it's whether it's whether we're advising a small company or is it, you know, a larger, it's communication. I think communication has really come under sharp focus in so many ways. It certainly at board level, the winners in terms of the best companies have the best communication strategy with all their stakeholders, with their employees, with their banks, with their landlords, etc., etc. I think at if you scale that up to a higher level, then systems, communication systems, especially when we're looking at a crisis, and this is a genuine crisis. Yeah. The communication strategy or lack of it comes into sharp focus, because I think that people, you know, everyone on this call and everyone out there, you know, just wants, you know, information and wants transparency. Mm-hmm. And I think that, that politicians or business leaders certainly will be judged in future years as to how well they communicated and how well those around them communicated.
And David, you must have a perspective on this. It is about communication in politics as well, isn't it? Has the government communicated particularly well in the UK during this crisis? And will they be more challenged now that Keir Starmer has become leader of the Labour Party? Will he hold them to account more?
I think he'd like to try. I mean, you can't ignore the fact it's a difference, I think, between where Donald Trump is and Boris Johnson. I think, first of all, Boris's month out is going to turn out to be quite helpful to him, because that seems to me to be the worst period in the government's communications piece. And to some extent, he can distance himself from that. And even I, who's certainly, you know, fairly long in the tooth viewer of politicians, feel that when he's on his feet, things just seem and sound better when he's delivering the message than when Matt Hancock or somebody else is delivering it. You can't ignore the fact he's got a whopping great majority and still got the thick end of 5-year term left. So he's got plenty of time to put whatever, and time will tell. We can need to look back and see whether in terms of the 28,000 deaths, which I agree with Anne, sounds horrific. When you look at how far behind Italy and Spain and France we were, and how now we're sort of ticking in front of them. But he's still got a long time to say, look, when you look back, the way we handled that aspect was in line with pretty much the rest of the globe. I think the way they handled the post-crisis situation, whatever that means, certainly the economics of it, will be way they'll be judged. And the extent and the speed at which he's able to get back on track with the manifesto promises that won the election. I think the other good thing is the bulk of the impact from a health point of view is going on in London and South East. And what won him the election, we mustn't forget, was the huge vote pool outside of that area. So if he gets back quickly to something that looks as though it's on in line with what everyone voted for, I think you'll look back and say, look, okay, we may have had more deaths than we should have had, but all in all, they've handled the social and the economic fallout quite well. As far as Trump's concerned, I'm not a US voter. My view from afar is that Trump will win. I think it's still going to be better the devil you know than Biden. Who knows how Biden would have handled it? I think if Michelle Obama had been the Democratic runner, I might be saying to you now, I think he's really got a problem. But my instinct tells me that he'll still win it in November.
Still on there. Christina, do you have a view on the political situation in both countries or elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's to echo the points that have been made previously. I think, you know, the US is in for a challenging time. Whatever your political views are over there and however you feel Trump is or isn't handling the situation, a bump in the US economy is a cold for the rest of the world. So, you know, they are facing unprecedented unemployment numbers. Yes. They have got huge challenges around their social care structure, and I think that that's going to be felt for a significant time going forward. And you know, it's fine to sit here and think, thank goodness I'm sitting in a country with the NHS and with the support structures that we have in place, but actually with the US floundering, it does pose significant economic issues for the rest of the world. Interestingly, you'll see that although the US economy is hitting some challenging times, because the US dollar is a safe haven currency, you're still seeing strength in the US dollar. So for countries or companies who are importing or having to purchase dollars, they're still finding challenge over that, despite the fact that, you know, other economies are potentially seeing an increase or improvement in what they're doing. So we're in for a challenging time, whatever happens. You know, the trade issues between China and the US, it feels like it's a really long, you know, it feels so far away from us in the UK at the moment, but actually there are material impacts on what happens over there to what happens to us over here. So yes, I think we're going to have to work very hard to ensure that our economies bounce back in the best way they possibly can. You know, it'd be nice to have a V-shaped recovery. If we can have a U-shaped recovery, that would be even better. What we don't want is an L-shape where our economy sort of flounders, and that's what we need to hope that those in charge know what they're doing.
Excellent. Well, just as we move towards the end of this conversation, and I'll start with you in a moment, Mark, but what have you enjoyed about the lockdown, and what might you do differently in the future? Anything, or what have you not enjoyed about the lockdown? What comes to mind?
Well, I think that I'm certainly fitter. That's for sure. I mean, obviously spending time with family is great, because, you know, you've got more time with your family. But I think just looking further afield, I think that social attitudes are certainly changing. To Anne's point earlier, I think is absolutely right, that people are, you know, reflecting a lot more about, you know, what's important in their lives. One of the positives, and I speak to my two, one's teenage, one's early 20s daughters, and I'm very happy that the celebrity culture has been right-sized at last. It's taken a while, but I think, you know, they celebrities are showing their vulnerability as the rest of us, or certainly some of them. And I think that the focus on frontline workers, care workers, is and shifts, making us, you know, certainly appreciate what they're doing, is fantastic. And I think that, you know, in future years, we can't forget that. And I think that, the last thing I'll say is that it's great to have Captain Tom, you know, get a promotion to Colonel Tom. I think we're all big fans of him. And when he got his flypie with the RAF, I think we were all saluting him. He's done a great job.
Some good points there. Thanks for joining us, Mark. David, I noticed the guitars in the background. Have you been strumming them a little bit more during the lockdown?
No, I've not strummed them at all. I watched a documentary here last night about the Shadows, and made me realise how inept I am. I'm a friend of Stratocaster there, and I'm no Hank Marvin, let me tell you that. I have taken up, I said to you earlier before we started, taken up an online tuition course in learning the harmonica, and hadn't realised how damn difficult an instrument it is to play. But I'm I'm trying.
Good. Well, you don't need to try now, David. Let me move quickly on to Anne. What have you enjoyed and not enjoyed? What are you going to do differently, Anne?
Well, as a kind of, I don't know whether I'm a reformed revolutionary or I've kind of enjoyed the seismic shift, the potential for new things to happen in the way society works. I just think we were getting old and staid and really, you know, can we move from city regions? Can we move to neighborhood? You know, I'm really, it might all be in my head, but I'm kind of really loving that idea. And from my perspective, personally, getting to know a neighborhood and investing in and caring about a neighborhood rather than, yeah, it's where I choose to live because there's a garden and I just keep getting out of it. I really liked that. And the other thing is kind of finding random opportunities to enjoy yourself. You know, when things are so limited, there's nothing to go to, you're not really allowed to see friends. How do you enjoy yourself in that very limited environment? And finding walks and looking at things and getting into birds, and you realize what a limited life you lead I have led, and it's all about one thing that you've sort of turned into the pillar of your life, and there's way more than that.
That's a really good point. Thanks, Anne. Thanks for joining us. Christina, what have you enjoyed or not enjoyed so much?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the nature. The dog has never had more walks in its life. I'm a big runner, so I've had an opportunity to find some different routes, which is great. I need to be a big runner because I've reignited my love of baking, so you've got to have the pros and the cons with that. And I think from a business perspective, we've never been further apart, but actually I'm having conversations with people that I would never have a conversation with normally, and I'm not having to go anywhere. So, you know, whether it's people in my office or people from, you know, international offices who I'm now speaking to via video, that, you know, I might have had a formal email with them previously, but actually I've met their kids now. So it's, you know, you definitely get to see a different side of people, which is brilliant. So not all bad.
Great. Well, let me say thank you very much for joining us in the Downtown Den. A thoroughly interesting conversation about international trade, global economy, and good luck for the future. Really appreciate you joining us. Thank you.